The opinions voiced on this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, or financial advisor prior to investing. Securities and investment advisory services are offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, a member of FINRA SIPC.
Relieved, but not euphoric. That's the way a lot of people are feeling. I certainly am. It's Welcome to What Really Matters. Peter McClellan, I'm your host, and we're going to be with Stan Husted today, and we're going to start now. Welcome to What Really Matters. This is your host, Peter McClellan, and I am privileged today to have Stan Husted with me. And Stan is somebody who's influenced my wanting to do radio or podcasting from a number of years ago, a bit of a mentor, though we're both kind of, not the youngest spring chickens out there, but we want to chat a little bit about this post-election feeling that so many of us have. So Stan, first of all, welcome. How are you doing today? What's going on in your world?
I'm doing well, as we will be very honest, is we're old guys, Peter.
Yeah, I know. That I was trying to be tactful and not say it too emphatically, but you're right. Yeah. You're right. We are. We're old guys.
You know, someone said, well, you're middle age, and I says, I don't think I'm going to live to be 130.
Well, you're like my older brother then. Yeah, we're of the same generation, though. You're right. You're absolutely right about that.
And what we're going to do is, I will confess, even in the conversation, I'm a longtime broadcaster, but I always tell people is you can't get rid of all of your prejudices. So what we're going to try and do is ask that wonderful question that you and I always talked about, which I learned from supposedly Henry David Thoreau and Ralph Waldo Emerson. It seems that whenever they would meet around Concord, Massachusetts or Walden Pond, they would ask this question: since we last met, what is clear to you now?
Oh, that's such a good question. That has helped me.
And that's what we're going to do, right?
That question, it's a wonderful question. You know, what is clear now? What is clear to you now? So, so if you're asking me the question, I'll tell you there's a few things that jump out, because I realize right now there is, I think there's a lot of sour grapes, and I think there's a lot of people that are pouring gas on the fire. I don't think either you or I want to do that today, but I do want to speak some truth. I am feeling a bit relieved. I'll admit, I voted for the lesser, what I perceived to be the lesser of two evils. I really believe that there's some things that I am confronting that are very real to me. I come from a family of policemen. My dad was a cop. My brother's a cop. And I honestly believe that when I see so much, I see cops still getting shot, senseless killings of police officers. I don't know whatever the reason is. It's an evil thing to be killing policemen. And I know there's some bad cops out there. Every profession has a bad apple or two, but I honestly believe and know this to be the truth. Most policemen are good, honest people, policewomen and policemen, right? I just believe that. I really do. It's been my experience. So I really feel what's gone on the past 8 years has been from the top, and this is one of the areas that I will fault Mr. Obama on. It's the issue of not rallying to the support of the police, but more to in many cases, just because some of the people were black, the criminals. And that to me is unfortunate, because I think Mr. Obama, being of African-American origin, could have been more of a unifier. And instead, I feel the races have become much more divided. And that's sad. That's sad. That's clear to me. It's sad. I think we can still heal. There's a need for healing. Let me switch gears. What's clear to me? My healthcare premiums have gone for me, my wife, and my two children that are still in school. We went from $1,200 a month 2 years ago to $1,800 a month this year, to next year $2,400 a month, because I have a health savings plan. But it's still a large deductible, and it's just a lot of money for healthcare. And even Ralph Dayton, you know, not Ralph, Senator, I know a Ralph Dayton, but there's a Mark Dayton even said that Obamacare, the Affordable Health Care Act, is unaffordable. It is. Something is broken. That has to be fixed. So let's not get too partisan on that issue. Premiums are killing us. It's running. It's over the top. It really is. So that's clear to me. And I'd say one more thing is as well, taxes. I've worked hard my whole life, and I really don't want politicians telling me if I'm paying too much or too little. I'm charitably minded. I do give back, if you would. I don't like that term because it implies that I stole something to begin with.
But you didn't?
Does. I didn't. No, I'm an honest guy. I don't steal from people. I especially because I'm in the financial world, I have to be honest and above board. I don't steal. But I've come to make a decent living and run a profitable business. And yet, as I add up the taxes I pay and then add on that to real estate tax and then sales tax, it's well over 50%. And I think, when is enough enough? So this idea that Hillary would have continued by going after people that are successful and make money, that's wrong. That's not the right place to start. I don't think that's going to help. It's only going to create more division because people don't like to have other people in their pockets. That's just not good. So that's, and I could go on. There's concerns about immigration, but I'm not going to step in that one. I won't, but I make trips to Latin America. I love Latin people. I really do Latin American people. There's great, I speak Spanish. I lived in Spain years ago, and so I have nothing against Spanish-speaking people. I do think some things are out of whack, but that's my take on it. So, Stan, how about you? I've gone on here kind of a tirade. What's clear to Stan at this point? What's clear to you?
Well, first of all, the fact that you came from police officers, right?
Right, right.
Well, then what happened to you? How come you didn't turn out any good?
Well, I was the youngest, and my dad always told me, he called me Pete. He said, Pete, you can do whatever you want to do. And I'd say, well, you think I should be a cop maybe? No. He didn't want me to be a policeman. I don't think he ever foresaw, he's been dead for, 20 years now, but I don't think he ever foresaw the impossible position that our society has put policemen in.
That's exactly what you would talk. Obviously, I was giving you a bad time because
I know you were.
But here's something that I want people to think about. I said, okay, I want you to get up tomorrow morning, mm-hmm. and I want you to have a sign there, right on your bed, okay? And I want you to pick up that sign. And I want you to write this: you might die today.
Oh, okay. You might die today.
And I want you to know that every police officer you see walking the streets, in the cars, he sees that sign every day.
You're right.
He goes to work. He goes to work knowing that that could happen. Not could happen to all of us, but his dear wife, when she sees him go off, or let's put it the other way around, she goes off and he sees her, they know, because it happens all the time, that somebody might kill them. And so what is clear to me is exactly that, is when a society does not respect the honorable people who help keep the world from blowing up, we're in trouble.
You're
and
right.
I think it is much more significant than the fact that, well, we've got a few bad cops. No, civilization. One of my heroes was a guy named Ariel Durant, great historian. And someone said that he he was given the assignment in Western Civ to write a term paper, and he spent his whole entire life writing that term paper, about 15 of these huge books about the history of Western civilization. And in his last book, called The Lessons of History, where he kind of reflected on things, and here's what he said. He said, I have come to the conclusion that what we call civilization always hangs by a thread, that we are never more than a step or two back to the world of barbarians and jungles and no law and order, in which it literally would be every man, woman for themselves, and everything of beauty and everything of grace and everything of accomplishment could be gone. And, as a historian as well as a longtime radio broadcaster, I live with that idea that we are here. You are here, we're all here to preserve the legacy of a better world for our children. And when we no longer respect the men and women who try and keep the law and order, because let's face it, there are bad guys in the world.
Yeah, there are. There are. Absolutely.
And every religious and scriptural tradition teaches that. History teaches us that. Our own experience teaches us that.
Yeah.
And so what's clear to me is just exactly that, is that we have to have a renewed respect for the men and women who we should pray for every day, because
Absolutely.
They go out and they keep us safe.
Yeah.
I think the second thing that's clear to me is that change is usually difficult but very necessary, because one of the laws of history is, you know, everything regresses back to the mean and to the mediocre. And that's the point. We all go back to average, and we're not called as creatures of God to be average. I remember one of the things that got me the most mad one day as a former teacher. I taught up where you live, up in Minnesota, for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And they were interviewing a teacher union rep and about the situation. And the guy said to the interviewer, he says, "Hey, I got a satisfactory on my last job evaluation. That's good enough." And I wanted to grab him through the screen and says, "You're a teacher of our kids and you will settle for satisfactory?"
That's not good. Not good.
That's not good.
No.
Why don't
no.
you want to be the very best teacher in the world? So it's clear to me that the loss of excellence, the disintegration into mediocrity, that has to be reversed. Now, the thing I've also learned about leaders is leaders are usually not, we talk about a well-balanced person. Leaders usually aren't. You know?
Yeah, you got a point there too.
Well, Winston Churchill, who saved Western civilization, you know?
Yeah, he did.
Look at his personal life. George Patton, who's, you know, many times, in fact, one of my mentors, a man who just died, who mentored me for many years, was a top-notch business consultant back in the 60s and 70s, said, "Leadership is always performed by outsized men and women."
Outsized meaning?
They're bigger.
Bigger, okay.
They're bigger than life. They're bigger in their vices. They're bigger in their temperaments. They are not. And he said, here's what's happened. We no longer have leaders. We only have people who are executives and pretending to be executives.
Mm. Meaning nobody wants to stick their neck out.
Nobody wants to lead.
Yeah, right.
Because leadership is foul weather work. It's dangerous work. You will have to be unpopular, and you will have to take the risk of many times people will say very terrible and nasty things about you, just as they did to go back and read what they said about Lincoln.
Yeah, you're right. Now, let me ask you this, because change is, I do think... There's one just, I know this is not going off topic. You started by saying this section about what's clear to you is change is difficult. And kind of an eerie thing that was said by a protester who was out complaining about, protesting about Trump now being the president-elect, was saying that there's going to be fatalities on both sides, or casualties on both sides, that this is the way change occurs in society, is when there's violence to the point of death. I don't think she was joking around, and I don't think she's wanting that necessarily, but she does because she wants Trump out, and she wanted President-elect Trump to be killed and whatnot, and that's crazy.
Well, right now, just as we fired up the recording device, I looked at Drudge, and his red headline is that Twitter is being overwhelmed with death threats.
Wow.
So... and what I would say right now, what I want to see from both sides, whether it's Hillary Clinton or whether it's Barack Obama, is you have to come forward. And if I can say it this way, I'll back up from the microphone. Stop it.
Yeah.
Just stop it.
Yeah. Yeah. Having the hissy fit doesn't do any good. You have every right in the world to be disappointed if your candidate didn't win. I mean, I'll be honest. I would have been disappointed if Hillary'd won. Would I go out and start burning American flags and chanting death to Hillary? No, I wouldn't have done that. In fact, that didn't happen when Obama won and Romney lost, did it? No, it didn't.
No,
happen.
It didn't. Yeah. So what I want to see now, I could say, you know, I went down. I won't talk about it, but Donald Trump was not number one for me.
No,
he was not number two.
No,
in fact, he wasn't even number three
for me.
But I have to simply say is that I'm a self-employed entrepreneur, and I know that you have to have what I call not only economic activity, you have to have economic energy. Or those of us, and every you know this, Peter,
yeah.
Every entrepreneur lives on the edge. They do.
It's true.
Everybody thinks you and I make a whole lot of money, and we don't make nearly as much as they think they do, and they don't know that we may be just a few months from our expenses overseeding our income.
A big setback, too. Or, you know, that's the life of an entrepreneur is ups and downs. There's going to be.
I just suffered a terrible 2-3 setbacks right in the row. Oof. Because the economy is – now, here's the point. The economy has caused people not to be aspirational. It has caused them to be survival.
Mm.
And – your economy cannot grow as long as people are looking at so many regulations, so much stuff. For instance, I talked recently to a client, and she said, Stan, I love you very much. You've helped me a great deal. I'd love to work with you right now, but Stan, every dollar I'm going into right now is not going into building for my future. All my money is going into just surviving.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry. Well, I know, that means she's in trouble. Which means I'm in trouble.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Which means since I may invest through you, you're in trouble.
Exactly. Yeah.
And we have to have somebody who says we are not going to allow mediocrity and survival thinking to dominate who we are. We are going to think great and good, and we're going to have big dreams. You know, I did a course on what we could learn from Donald Trump about a year ago. And it was about the phenomenon of Donald Trump, not about, because I wasn't favoring him. I just was, as a broadcaster, I said, what's going on here?
Right.
So what I did is I literally did something that most people should have done. They didn't. I went out and bought every one of his books.
No kidding. Really?
Yeah. Because I'd heard some commentator say, a very smart man, he says, you will never understand Donald Trump until you read The Art of the Deal, which he wrote as a young man back in the 1980s.
Huh.
And so I did.
Okay.
And here's what is true of Donald Trump. He lives for the deal. You may not like that, but he has always been a deal maker. That means he's a compromiser. He does not believe in a bad deal. He said, a bad deal is no deal. Never make a bad deal.
Okay.
You know, you never make a bad deal. He said, if it's not a good deal, it's, as Stephen Covey would say, if it's not a good deal, it's no deal.
All right. Now, part of his campaign was to overturn a lot of the bad deals that we've made.
Absolutely.
With our trading partners.
What he would say is our culture, our economy, and our government people have made a bunch of bad deals.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the reason it was a bad deal is they were the only ones who benefited from the deal.
Right. Well, I think that's part of the problem too. There's an attitude, I think, among a lot of people that would say that we should somehow feel badly that we're Americans and that America has been known for its, you know, just, you know, being a place where people have aspired to great things. And I think that's something to be proud of, not feel embarrassed by.
No greatness ever came out of a sense of guilt.
No.
Never.
Never. Never. Guilt Never. Doesn't get us anywhere. You're right. You're right.
Right. Guilt gets you nowhere.
Hmm.
And so if you want a sense of personal greatness, even I would say is, they say, well, you know, my Christian faith is rooted in God giving us a guilt trip. No.
No, no, it's not.
What it's rooted in is you are guilty, but you're not.
Yeah.
You are made in my image, and you are going to reign with me in the universe. So get ready for greatness, baby, because that's your job.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. That's absolute truth. So, so what else is clear to you then? What else? I mean, change is painful. Change is difficult.
Yeah, what is clear to me just like that is we have to have some way of restoring a spirit-led optimism and aspiration to our world.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is what I'm going to try and do as much as I can, and I know this is part of what the program is all about. You know,
right.
What It Takes Radio is what really matters. Let's do what it takes. Let's do what really matters. Let's try and sort out the trivial in our lives and focus on what is vital. As you will say, even to many of your clients, and they don't fully understand this, but I know, Peter, you know, they will get all worked up about their money, and you'll be the first to tell them is, I have news for you. money is not the most important thing in your life.
That's right. That's right.
You know,
when it becomes the central theme of our life, it dominates us. We become slaves to it then. Whether we're broke or whether we're wealthy, yep. But if money is the central thing that you think about night and day, that's not healthy. It's not good.
What I loved a joke one time. I mean, it was I actually saw him do it. A pastor came up in the church I was going to at that time, and it was just before the offering. And he was kind of a character, and he started to act like this. He says, "I've got a word from God." Well, you know, you're kind of you say uh-oh. And he said, "Here's the word. Your money, there is no money. There are no financial advisors. There are no estate lawyers. There are no fine automobiles in heaven. Everything you have to give away. And so every week we get to practice. Here's the offering."
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
And it just struck us that absolutely he's right, you know, that... And we all know this. We're speaking in cliches, but the unfortunate thing is that we need to be reminded of the cliches. You know, and what came to me is the third or fourth clarity, wherever we're at, is that what Karen and I, we were talking about this because we both have small businesses that help supplement our someday retirement, which may or may not happen. And Peter, you and I have talked about this. What is clear to us is that a lot of us aren't going to get to retire in the traditional ways.
Yeah, it's true.
You know,
it's true.
That's
absolutely
true. So that's going to be true of more and more people. And so, but we sat down together and we prayed for the election. You know, even though we have our own prejudices, we prayed for the election. And then she turned to me and said, "But Stan, whatever happens, we can handle it."
That's right. That's right.
We are people of faith, and we'll be okay.
Yeah.
Didn't say we'll prosper and be mighty and powerful and rich, but we'll be okay.
Yeah.
And but I do want people to somehow catch a sense of spirit-led optimism. And you know what? Optimism never comes out when you say, "Let's live mediocre."
Yeah.
And let's live in a way in which spiritual reality is optional, because it's not. If you want to be healthy, spiritual reality must be prime and vital to your life. Some of you don't like that. You don't believe in that. Well, I'm sorry. You're wrong and I'm right. It's true. You know. Someone says, "Well, I don't believe in that." And I said, "Well, it doesn't matter whether you believe in it or not."
Well, there's principles involved here that are, you know, you could not believe in gravity, but if you jump off
a cliff,
you're as much as you don't believe in gravity, you're dropping. You're gonna hit the pavement. You know?
So I would say what finally, maybe you and I can, because we're good friends on this. I think one of the things we're saying is that there needs to be a renewal of spirit in what is important and in doing what it takes. And the fact that we're going to stop doing some things that weren't working and we're going to at least try some new things, I think gives me, no matter who I am or where I was, it gives me a spirit of, things could be better. So that's where I'm at, even though, as I tell people, is if any of you believe that politics is ever going to significantly change the reality of your lives, I'm sorry, that's a bad bet.
That's a bad bet. It is. You're absolutely right about that, and that's true. That is so true.
If your life is miserable and unhappy now and unfulfilled and bad, and if you think the election of Donald Trump will change that, you're wrong. And if your life is miserable and unhappy and everything else, and if you thought that the election of Hillary Clinton would change that, you're double wrong.
You're absolutely. Well, yeah, both equally wrong. I would agree. And maybe even doubly wrong, because I had problems with the idea of voting for Hillary, though. I really want at this point too to not say things that are going to be intentionally inflammatory, meaning I realize that a lot of people are disappointed. Half the country roughly is, right? I mean, if she won the popular vote, there's at least half the country is divided there or are unhappy with the results.
Well, and you and I, as I said, you and I have lived in Minnesota.
And I live here now.
Will we ever win the Super Bowl?
Probably not. If my daughter hears this, she'll be upset because she's a really big Vikings fan. But that's, I just, whatever. I like the Vikings.
The last time the Chicago Cubs won the pennant, not the World Series, even the pennant, was the year I was born.
Wow.
But you know what? You hang on. You hang on.
Yeah.
and some days, good thing. And yeah, like someone said, the Cubs won. And as our pastor in our church said, the Cubs won. And let's check. Maybe it did freeze over.
Maybe it did. Maybe it did. But I do think that there is an opportunity before us for change, and change is good, it, especially if it's done with the right spirit. And I just want to see the country move forward, see the economy grow, opportunities for everybody. Do I want to see taxes go up? No. Do I want to see healthcare costs continue to go up? No. You know, do I want to see the country overrun by third world countries? No. I think immigration is good. I'm a byproduct of an immigrant. My mother was born in Scotland. I mean, so I'm not opposed to immigration. I don't want all of Scotland to move here at one time. We couldn't absorb it all.
Right.
And the bagpipe music would drive us insane. You know.
So that's right. You've heard the joke. You know what a definition of a gentleman is?
What's that?
It's a Scotchman who knows how to play the bagpipe but doesn't.
That's not funny.
Well, and there's some simple things like I was thinking more and more because, you know, the reason last night, I was born in Chicago. I was actually born in an area that was very genteel in 1945, you know, but is now not. And we've gotten used to the fact that about 12 to 15 young men and women get killed on the streets of Chicago every weekend.
That's crazy.
What is wrong with us?
That's crazy. Well, what it's like you're saying, there needs to be a return to the spiritual side of life. You know, we have to, as a country, embrace that it's good to have God first. And country and family, and believe in family, and I feel bad for the people living in that environment, because it's got to be like a war zone, you know.
It is.
But horrible. But there is an answer, and people don't have to live in that. And that's the one thing I learned, you know, years ago going off to live in Spain. I saw the communist propaganda that had pictures of people being hit with the fire hose water, you know, in Harlem, New York, years and years ago, you know, back probably in the 67 riots or earlier even. And it said that these folks were being kept in Harlem. And I'm thinking, no, they're not. There's so much propaganda around the world that people, I think the rest of the world resents our freedoms. But I think it's good to know we do live in a country where we still have lots of freedoms. Yes, we've had them trampled on. We've had the Constitution challenged. We've got to make some changes to get back to our roots. But the roots are good. The roots are good, meaning to abide by the Constitution and to you know, be able to have freedom is such a blessing, because it's what you do with it that's going to matter. It really is. And I'm convinced that so many of us will someday stand before God. And if we're not careful, the gifts and talents he's given us, we will just have to kind of say, I didn't do much with it. Sorry. You know, no. You're, I love that your whole thing of the, you know, what it takes and do you know what it takes for you to be successful at whatever you're going to do? And that this is opportunity time. I really believe that.
And that's what we're trying to do. And that's why you're going to be joining me on the program and I'm going to be joining you on the program.
Absolutely.
Because there are things that there are, as I say, there are stories and skills and strategies and things you have to do because that's what it takes. It's late Friday afternoon and you and I are still working. You know why? Because that's what it takes.
It's what it takes. It is. It is. And here's what I would say too. I know there are people who would listen to this and go, oh, Peter, you're getting political. And no, I'm sharing, you know, basically how I see it. And I would say this, it wasn't easy for me, but you know, there's a mandate to pray for our leaders. I prayed for Mr. Obama, President Obama. You're going to have to pray. Mm-hmm. If you were a Hillary supporter, you're going to have to pray. If you're believing that we're supposed to pray for our leaders, that they'd have wisdom, that we might live in times that are peaceable and that there'd be, mm-hmm. you know, peace and prosperity, you'd better pray for Mr. Trump because he is the president-elect. And so I'm just saying there's time to put down the nonsense, you know, stop pouring gasoline on the fire, so to speak, and let's just move forward and you know, not be so divisive. So I don't want to pour salt in the wounds of people who are upset. Let them, you know, I'd say, you know, you'll get past it. You'll live. I lived when Obama got elected and then got elected a second time. Life goes on. Life will go on with Mr. Trump as well. But, you know, move forward. And I love what we're talking about here because it is about the individual acknowledging, you know, wait a minute, maybe there is more to life than what I've been doing. Maybe there is more that I could do that would be not only more gratifying and fulfilling, but something that really is valuable to other people, making a way for other people. That's got God written all over it. I just believe that. I really believe it's what we're called to do.
Well, and you know, I think we'll probably just kind of finish it up here if we can. But let's make this commitment because even at my age and stage, some people do call me a mentor, and I say, no, I'm just basically an overeducated disc jockey. But the truth is,
you're a lot more than that.
but I do have mentors myself.
Yeah.
And this was actually a younger man who said, you know, we were talking. He said, Stan, let me tell you something. He said, you either bless or you curse. Mm. Every time you have an encounter with another human being,
it's true.
You either bless them or you curse them. There is no neutrality. They are either better off because that happened or they're worse off because you were there. And, you know, that gets me. And that got me when the little gal messed up the order at the service station. I still have an opportunity to bless her and not curse her.
Yeah,
and maybe we should just make that a part of how we'll go into the new presidential era, to be blessings and not be cursing.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah, and if that's if that resonates with you, I hope it does because it certainly resonates with me. Well, Stan, hey, thank you for
you signed you signed it off, Peter. It was your show.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'll do that. You know, the one thing that we that I'll often do with my counterpart Jeff Hyback that's not so often is he'll often say, "I say, Jeff, we have a saying around here," and he says, "Invest in a conversation." And I would encourage the country to do that right now. Talk. Don't throw Molotov cocktails. Let's talk and let's move forward. Let's be positive. Let's pray for our leaders. And things might just turn out okay. So on that note, until next time, have a good conversation with each other. And bless, don't curse, as Stan said.
Amen.
Amen.
You've been listening to What Really Matters with Peter McClellan, a chartered financial consultant with the 401k Latte Company in Lakeville, Minnesota. For a no-cost consultation or second opinion of financial issues, call us at 952-882-0400. That's 952-882-0400. Or visit us online at 401klatte.com. That's 401klatte.com. We want to remind you to invest in a conversation.